There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Gramling. I'm joined by Connor Orr of the Weekside Podcast to recap the Sunday action from Week 7. And you know, Connor, we were kind of, we kept it positive last week, but we kind of pointed out none of the games were terribly exciting. And now on Sunday, we just had all sorts of exciting finishes. So, That's karma? What is that?
I think it's just life as a football fan, you know, like some Sundays are just terrible and you wonder why you're doing this, and then some Sundays you accidentally fall asleep before the Seahawks and Cardinals go to overtime like I did. Best game of the year.
It was kind of nice. It's like the 1 o'clocks had a ton of exciting finishes, and then the 4 o'clocks were all kind of like you know, good matchups, good performances, but just none of the games were close. And it gave everyone a nice break, decompress a little bit. And then the Cardinals and Seahawks just sort of unveil some chaos on Sunday Night Football. Wacky game is how I would describe that one.
Beautifully wacky, though. You know, I think,
yes.
And anything that sort of reorders the sort of natural pecking order of things, I think, is always very fun and attractive. And, you know, Chris Collinsworth pointed out in the broadcast last night, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but every single team from that division might make the playoffs, which is wild.
Yeah. It would be awesome and deserving because that division is absolutely stacked.
Just take a spot away from the NFC East.
Yeah. I think we'd all sign up for that.
Like, just put one of those teams in the in the East, and then just give them that. You know,
the Eagles are about to run the table, though, so we'll regret saying that in a little while. But let's start Sunday Night Football. Cardinals, Seahawks. Cardinals get the victory in overtime to sort of mix things up in the NFC West. Now, I mean, look, this was, to me, the theme of this game was you had two teams that can't play defense for various reasons. The Seahawks missing their best player in Jamal Adams on that side of the ball. I'm not sure they're very good defensively with Jamal Adams. They're certainly not good without him. And the Cardinals, look, no Chandler Jones. There's no real answers in that pass rush right now. And they finally, I give Vance Joseph a ton of credit in this one. And I know people will look at the numbers and say, well, how can you give credit to a guy who just gave up 500-something yards and 30-something points? Not only no Chandler Jones in this one, Dre Kirkpatrick is out there playing on one leg. And even before that, you couldn't match up with the Seahawks receivers. And Vance Joseph makes a decision about halfway through the second half that he's just going to unleash Buda Baker and just live with the consequences, and the consequences end up being great for Arizona.
Yeah, and you know what? I give him more credit than initially. You know, his comments about, you know, Isaiah Simmons and everything kind of freaked a lot of people out in the offseason that he couldn't use him like he did at Clemson, but I think he was probably playing that a little close to the vest, the same way that he was playing what he was going to do with Buda Baker close to the vest. I think that he is moving these guys around creatively. He is doing, you know, some smart things, whereas, you know, Simmons was almost exclusively a pass rusher, you know, a week ago, and now his role is different. And, you know, that subtle shape-shifting is really the only way that you're going to kind of even nip at the heels of a quarterback like Russell Wilson playing as well as he is right now. You know, you have to be different every week and versatile every week and, you know, almost as good or as, you know, amoebic as the Patriots were at their best a year or two ago, you know. And so I think they're not there, but I mean, obviously when you give up 34 points, you're not there, but at least you're working your way towards something like that.
Yeah, and look, they need to be creative with the problem solving at this point because no Chandler Jones, you're not going to have much of a pass rush. And again, Patrick Peterson played well last night. I know he got, you know, he was in that highlight of the two Tyler Lockett catches, but he was really good against DK Metcalf in this game. That said, Peterson is not quite what he was a couple of years ago, and you know, Byron Murphy, promising young player, Dre Kirkpatrick, you know, playing on a bad wheel tonight. They have to figure some things out with this defense, and this was a promising start. This was a guy who made an adjustment in game and it worked. And Russell Wilson, look, you know Russell better than me, but my take on Russell Wilson is usually once, maybe twice a year, he just has some sort of mind-bogglingly bad, you know, whether it's a pick six or a red zone interception that you just kind of say like, oh, that was very un-Russell Wilson-like, and then it doesn't happen again. He managed to, like, cram three or four of those into one game.
Yeah.
Which was, and again, I don't think this is a deal where it's like, whoa, Russell Wilson, you know, he's in trouble now. He just made a series of mistakes that he usually spreads out over, like, a decade, and he just compressed them into one night.
Yeah, and we've seen those games before. I mean, what was it, the you know, going all the way back to you know, that playoff loss to Carolina, I think, that year that Cam Newton won the MVP back in 2015 or whatever. What, he had four picks in the first half in that game, or three picks in the first half? There's one of those playoff games where he did that, and then the second half led the team all the way back to within a touchdown or whatever of winning the game. And, you know, that just seems to be his thing. He can get over stuff like that. He's coached himself mentally to the point where they're sort of irrelevant and you only focus on the good things that you've done. But yeah, he's an interesting player like that. I mean, I think everybody has a bad day. You know, Aaron Rodgers has bad days. You know, Lamar Jackson will soon maybe have a bad day, I'm sure, at some point. But, you know, it is interesting, like, the types of throws that he got wrong on Sunday night, right? Like, some of those floaters, you know, some of the off-speed stuff that is so such a central tenet to his game, and it's just so weird to see him mess that up, you know, even though you're right. I mean, it's one of those law of averages things where eventually, you know, one of these times your arm's just going to be a little short, or you're going to put just a little less power on it than you need.
Just don't expect it to come in bunches like this. Yeah, he had the one in the red zone where DK Metcalf, obviously the highlight.
How about
game,
that?
DK Metcalf chasing.
Holy
down
crap!
Buda Baker. Poor
Did
Buda
you see
Baker
him turn around and, like, you know, like the moment that Buda Baker, like, I have to watch it again because I'm not sure if he was about to put his arm up like to celebrate, and then all of a sudden this giant human being is like gonna tackle him. But you know what it reminded me of was the those videos that MIT always posts about the robots that they make that like run and unlock doors and stuff like that. That was DK Metcalf. I mean, that was terrifying to see him at full speed like that. And I mean, I think it was, I think it was Mike Florio that said, like, you never see a player run a 40-yard dash, an actual 40-yard dash in real life, unless something really good or something really bad has happened. But I don't care. I mean, that was just one of the most phenomenal things ever. And we've been blessed this week with the DK Metcalf full field sprint, the Daniel Jones full field sprint. Mm-hmm. It's been a wonderful week for Next Gen Stats' miles per hour metric. And I've just, like, as a 40-yard dash enthusiast, have never been happier in my life.
Nice. Yeah, I think Budda Baker lifted his arm and thought about a stiff arm and then just realized it was hopeless and he was just going to have to cover up the ball and just accept that he was going to be chased down on that. He looked like the slowest man in the world comparatively.
It was incredible. Like it was just ridiculous. Hilarious.
But yeah, you had that interception, which again, that's not a play that, you know, that unfolds that way very often. The Seahawks kind of quick snapped it, and Russell thought he had a guy wide open, and he didn't, and he floated the ball, and it got picked. He had a miscommunication with DK Metcalf on that Patrick Peterson interception. Again, another interception in scoring range, which you certainly haven't seen from the Seahawks this year, who are, their red zone efficiency was at a historic level coming to this game. And then the last one, if you're going to worry about it, and you shouldn't worry about anything with the Seahawks offense, but if you're gonna worry about something, the two hits that Russell took in overtime on back-to-back plays were as big. I've never seen him get hit that hard, and to get hit that hard on back-to-back plays, and then that third down play after the after the holding call brought back the DK Metcalf would have been winning touchdown, and it was a legitimate call, and I'm not sure DK Metcalf goes for a touchdown without that hold aiding him there, but you know, it just kind of looked like no one was on the same page on that play. None of the receivers are looking back for the ball, and Russell just kind of said, like, this is our last snap of the game. I'm just tossing it, and I'm going to see what happens, and Isaiah Simmons is there to pick it off.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things where, you don't expect it from Russell Wilson, even under the circumstances, even under the duress, but these things are going to happen. And I think if you're Seattle, you'd rather get one of these out of your system now before it becomes one of those deals where you're so you're too far down the line to kind of make any adjustments. And that's another good thing, is I think that, you know, Russell Wilson is one of those guys that will learn from this and kind of readjust after a game like this.
And then so Kyler Murray, who basically goes untouched the entire game, that Seahawks pass rush, and they didn't do a whole lot of blitzing. I mean, that's the difference you saw in the second half. The Cardinals decided they had to start blitzing. The Seahawks never really got there, which, you can debate it one way or another. But, Kyler ends up creating enough. I wonder if this offense provides enough answers for its quarterback. But the quarterback certainly provides the answers quite a bit, whether it be, some of the downfield throws he'll make late in the down, or more often it's with his legs that he's creating at this point. But, the offense gets it done against a bad defense. Cliff Kingsbury had he had an interesting night. I'm not quite sure how else to put it. His game management was creative.
Well, I'll say two things. For me, there was the light bulb moment on that final drive where they're going down to kick the game tying field goal. I thought this was probably Cliff's most brilliant stretch of play calls, because he ran the ball so effectively, right? And this is what the beauty of the air raid, or whatever, the air raid hybrid, whatever you want to call what they're doing, is. I think they're settling into that now, is when you have four great receivers on the field and a great quarterback, like, the middle of the field is non-existent for the defense, right? They're spread to the max. And there was the there was the design draw play that Kyler audibled to, and then there was, I think, one or two more big runs that got them into field goal range. And to me, that's a light bulb moment for Cliff, or hopefully is a light bulb moment to Cliff, that's like, hey, we can essentially do this all day, every day. You know, I think they should be in the market for a wide receiver at the trade deadline to even, further kind of bolster that idea that you're not going to be able to stop them unless you have, you completely vacate the middle of the field. But I thought that was interesting. And the other thing I'll say about that is I was amazed, and I don't know if you kind of thought this as well, but how effectively Kyler can run a 2-minute offense and how like almost robotic they were and how impressive that is given the fact that this was a pandemic shortened offseason. And that's usually the kind of stuff that teams just sort of have to forego for the sake of just getting all their other install in.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to say I'm less impressed. They're so talented. They have so much talent on that offense. And you know, when you play a defense like the Seahawks, you set the terms against the Seahawks defense. They are just desperately trying to hang on and hope you make mistakes. And plays like the DeAndre Hopkins fumble. That's what they're trying to get. They're not going to stop you. So it's just a matter of how quickly do you want to go get after him. And look, they did it in the end. I still kicking the field goal on second down, especially when you're not running the clock down and you're leaving the door open for Russell Wilson when you miss it. There was just a lot of stuff that was lacking as far as the Cardinals actually closing out a game that was, again, Russell Wilson doesn't do this against other teams. Russell Wilson, there's the rare week where he just started giving gifts, and you have to figure out a way to win this game, which the Cardinals did eventually. They just made it way too interesting.
They did. And you wonder, like, it is one of those things where it's like, okay, is Cliff Kingsbury going to evolve into the kind of head coach who no longer makes the, who turns that game into a 55-21 win, or what's it going to take to get the Cardinals there? Because like we said, they are good enough, right? They're certainly talented enough to just rain points on people.
We will stick in the NFC West here, go out to Foxborough, where the 49ers just smashed the Patriots in that Jimmy Garoppolo return to New England game here. Look, we'll start with the positive stuff. I know I wrote the 49ers a little bit 2 weeks ago when they got blown out by Miami at home. Kyle Shanahan has just figured out how to make it work offensively here. Part of it is Jimmy Garoppolo getting healthier, absolutely, but he had answers against the Rams last Sunday night, and when you looked at the Patriots this summer, after Dante Hightower has opted out, after Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins and even Landon Roberts have all left, and they're sort of, the cupboard's completely bare at linebacker, you kind of wondered if that would affect them. It really hadn't to this point, but it certainly did in this game where, Kyle Shanahan just completely exposed them on the second level.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where Kyle Shanahan has always historically performed well against Bill Belichick. Like, even if you go back to 2015, 2014, 2013, whether it's Matt Schaub or Matt Ryan or whoever he has, he's always been able to operate pretty well against New England. And so you wonder if it's like, is this a long-term indictment of the Patriots, or is this just a bad week where they got a guy that Belichick kind of has a hard time figuring out? But what was interesting to me from this game in particular with the 49ers offense is how they were able to just out-muscle the Patriots. And you don't see the Patriots really get out-muscled that often. They're a pretty technically sound team that tackles well, but even Jimmy Garoppolo was lowering his shoulder on guys and plowing people over for first downs. And New England historically takes your best player away so well, but, Kittle had a good game, Deebo Samuel had a good game, Brandon Ayuk had a good game. They didn't shut anybody down. And so it was just interesting to see the 49ers sort of dress the Patriots down as much as they did. That's the second worst loss of the Belichick era, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how the Patriots respond over the next couple of weeks. This is a team that every player on that team is used to playing for championships. And, if they're playing for 8-8, you wonder if, they're going to have more weeks than this at this point. Offensively, look, Cam Newton is still the guy. You wonder if when they put Jared Stidham in, they were hoping to catch fire and like, oh my goodness, you know, Stidham, you know, it didn't win the game, but he had a great quarter and a half of football, and now you maybe have something to build off of with him. They don't. Stidham has been a disaster in mop-up duty this year. But Cam struggled again, and I thought this week was worse than last week. I thought last week was disjointed, which you could understand with the limited practice, and I thought there were some bad breaks with some of the turnovers they had. But this week, the three interceptions he threw were, okay, you know, the Julian Edelman deflection, maybe, you know, you just say that shouldn't end up as an interception. It's a terrible throw, though. Cam was scattershot with the accuracy all game. I thought it was a big step back for this offense, and I mean, quite frankly, I mean, Josh McDaniels has to figure out what they're going to be going forward. He has to find answers.
You almost have to go full Ravens, right? At this point, I mean, full year one Lamar Ravens and sort of a version of what they were running at the beginning of the season with Cam, that it looked effective enough. And, you know, and then you sort of build off it from there, maybe work backwards, rebuild his confidence, because that's what it is. I think it's a confidence thing. And we've all seen Cam Newton make great throws, like Pro Bowl level throws for years. But you're right. I mean, that Julian Edelman one was a bad one. He's throwing bad picks, and the offense just doesn't look like there's any cohesive flow to it whatsoever. And yeah, no, it's interesting. But I have a trivia question for you, Gary.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, this one should be right up your alley, and I think you should nail this one. Who was the coach? Kyle Shanahan handed Belichick his second worst loss ever as the head coach of the Patriots. Who was the coach that handed Belichick his worst ever defeat? It was in 2003, the year that they beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl.
I'm going to say that was probably Mike Mularkey.
No.
Oh.
No, this think legendary head coach who, if he wanted, could have been head coach of any team in football. Like legendary.
It's Greg Williams.
It's Greg Williams.
That's right. I forgot.
Greg Williams.
The Bills almost.
Yeah.
I was thinking those mid-aughts Bills, and I was like, no, that was Mularkey who beat him in that Bills blowout.
Yeah, it was Greg Williams, baby.
Wow.
Greg Williams, Drew Bledsoe, Travis Henry. Like, what a, yeah, Tom Brady threw four picks in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So
I remember the game. That was the Bledsoe revenge game, and I think Lawyer Malloy revenge game as well, maybe. Oh. Those
all
were,
Patriot defector revenge game.
Yep, those were the days. I forgot that was a Greg Williams team. Holy cow. That's a great trivia question. Thank
Fast
you, Connor.
And physical. Yeah, you got it.
Let's go off to Nashville. The undefeated Steelers defeat the previously undefeated and now no longer undefeated Titans. I'm gonna have some weird takes in this game. I mean, look, the Steelers were absolutely dominant for 35 or 40 minutes. I mean, all three phases. The offense was just moving the ball at will. The defense was keeping the Titans off schedule. You had a big punt return from Ray McCloud. And then they just sort of, you know, the offense sort of let up a little bit. Titans get back into it. But this was a game, look, the Steelers lose the turnover battle 3-0. There were a series of weird bounces, you know, the deflected type stuff. One deflection on the Steelers' end on offense ends up an interception for the Titans. There was a deflection on the Titans' end that ended up turning into a third and long conversion for Tennessee. It sounds strange to say in a game where you know the Titans are lining up for a game tying 45-yard field goal and miss it, but the Steelers didn't really get a bounce in this game. And yet they still go out there and beat an undefeated team on the road.
Yeah, and it really was, you know, you hate to see a game like this come down to a kicker, obviously, but, you know, just one of those games that I think further bolsters everything that we've been saying about Pittsburgh to this point. They can beat really good teams. Their pass rush is legitimate, and it's a threat against even you know, established good offenses and good running games. And yeah, I mean, you, in a game where, you know, you take away Chase Claypool and you force them to try to do some other stuff, they're able to manufacture plenty of points and they have plenty of options elsewhere, which I think we're all sort of waiting on is like, okay, what's going to happen now when they really start to kick this into full gear and start showing us some of the other stuff they have going on offense? And it's, we're seeing that already, and it's scary.
Yeah, yeah, and look, Roethlisberger ends up throwing three interceptions in this game. One was sort of an end of the first half Hail Mary-ish. I didn't think they needed to throw the Hail Mary. I thought they could have tried a field goal going into halftime here, but whatever, it happens. And then you have the deflection. The one, I didn't mind the third one. They went up the seam into the end zone for Juju Smith-Schuster. You got a linebacker who's, you know, Ben's looking at the back of his helmet. Smith-Schuster had his hands on the ball. Jayon Brown just makes a nice play and gets his hands up last minute, knocks it out of Smith-Schuster's hands, and then they get the interception off the deflection there. And I know everyone just wanted the Steelers to take the points and make it a six-point lead, but I don't know. You got a chance to put the game away. Just put it away.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I thought it was fine. I think that Mike Tomlin is one of those coaches that I'll trust infinitely in those situations. He probably blends that, whatever, that nebulous idea of a gut instinct and listening to the actual numbers better than any other coach in the league. So I think that there was probably some sound foundation behind that decision. And, you know, so it doesn't work out that time.
Yeah. The moral of the story for me, I guess, is I know a lot of people look at this and say, ooh, Steelers got lucky, you know, they got the missed field goal. I thought they dominated this game. I think they're an extremely legitimate 6-0 at this point. All right, Connor, wait right there. You'll be back in a second. But it is now time for the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. As always, I am joined by Michael Fabiano of SI.com/fantasy and the SI Fantasy Podcast. If you need more of him, he's here every Monday. But if you need more of him, every day, 24/7, 365, SI.com/fantasy. Fabs, early waiver wire.
Yeah, there's a lot to. I laugh because I just think, what Eagles can I pick up this week to play against the Cowboys? Because
the worst
team in the NFL.
Do I cue you up to talk about the Cowboys right now, or is it too raw?
No, it's fine. I'm numb at this point. Anyway, sorry. So at quarterback, Joe Burrow was very good. 406 yards, 3 touchdowns, another touchdown as a runner, over 33 fantasy points. He's got the Titans coming up, and their defense is not very good. So Joe Burrow, who, I mean, boy, the rookie quarterbacks this year, holy moly, they've been playing well. I mean, unbelievable. And Tua, he's going to be a guy to pick up too. Now, he's got the Rams, so you're not going to play him, but Tua's worth a look. He should be owned in two QB leagues already. Baker Mayfield, and I don't have a lot of trust in Baker. Explain this to me. So Odell Beckham Jr. is one of the most talented wide receivers in the National Football League. Goes to Cleveland, he just can't put up the numbers he did in New York. Baker, not good this year from a fantasy perspective, like at all. Like he's got like a 16-point ceiling, basically. OBJ goes out, and Baker throws 5 touchdown passes. How the hell does that happen, right? So I don't know, whatever. But I would pick him up. They got the Raiders coming up. It's a really good matchup. I don't particularly trust Baker Mayfield, but you got teams on a bye, and he put up a good number against Cincinnati. I mentioned Tua as another quarterback to pick up. Maybe don't play him this week, but you can pick him up. Kirk Cousins coming off a bye, and he's got the Packers and the Lions in the next couple of games. I know he's not reliable, but still at least a QB2. And then if you're really hurting, Phillip Rivers, who had a big game before the Colts bye, has got Detroit coming up in week 8.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, Baker. Baker's going to be taking your life into your hands when you start him here. Oh, boy.
I know. But the matchup's right. He's coming off a good game. And I don't get Baker. I really don't. This is the first, actually productive fantasy stat line he's had all season, basically.
Absolutely. Let's go running backs here.
And there's a lot to discuss here. So Kenyon Drake last night injured his ankle and had to be taken off the sidelines on a cart. I would expect that he is going to miss some time. Chase Edmonds, some would argue, is the better running back in Arizona regardless. And he had 145 total yards, over 21 fantasy points against Seattle. Now, the Cardinals have a bye coming up. So you're not going to be able to use him right away, but he has to be owned across the board. Carlos Hyde, 15 carries, 68 yards and a touchdown against Arizona. Chris Carson suffered a midfoot sprain, and he's looking like he's going to miss some time. They've got the Niners coming up. That's a revenge game for Carlos Hyde, so he needs to be owned. Speaking of the Niners, Jeff Wilson Jr. had a huge game. That Niners backfield is going to drive me nuts. That one in the Bucs and the Rams. There's actually a few more. But we all thought Jerick McKinnon would be the guy. I didn't like him. He was a sit-em for me. But I didn't think that that was going to happen. Jeff Wilson became like Raheem Mostert in that game. It was crazy. But unfortunately, he got hurt at the end of the game. And he looks like he's hurt bad. And so now you're looking at, okay, is it going to be Jamichael Hasty? Or if Tevin Coleman gets activated off the injured reserve list, is it Coleman in week 8? There's confusion there. And that backfield is going to be confusing. So Hasty's worth a look. Coleman's worth a look. I can't sit here and tell you right now that I know exactly who's going to be the lead back in San Francisco next week. I don't think anybody can outside of maybe Kyle Shanahan. Wayne Gallman's worth a look as well. Had over 16 points against the Eagles. When Devonta Freeman went down, he's dealing with an ankle injury. And if he can't play this week, Gallman is at least worth adding, but he's got the Bucs. So good luck with that one.
Yeah.
And then both of the Ravens running backs, right? J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Mark Ingram was injured previously, previous to the bye. And it looks like he's not seriously hurt, but I feel like if Ingram ends up being at less than 100%, maybe Dobbins gets some more work this week. Time will tell. And Dobbins needs to be owned across the board anyways, because like he could be a league winner in the second half. He's such a good player.
Yeah.
They just haven't given him enough snaps and touches. Maybe that'll change. Some other running backs. Most of these guys are owned in competitive leagues. Okay. But when I go on ESPN's ownership percentage, I see fewer than 50% for Jamal Williams, for Giovanni Bernard. Boston Scott's owned in 50% of leagues, and he's playing the worst team in the NFL, the Cowboys. And then LaMichael Perine is not owned in most leagues, 11.1% on ESPN. He had 13.5 points against the Bills. He had more touches than Frank Gore. Maybe there's going to be like a passing of the torch there, right? Because I know Adam Gase loves Gore, but Perine could end up being the guy down the stretch who leads this backfield in snaps and touches. So he's also worth a look off the wire. I get it. It's a jet, and so you're not going to get much reliability, but touches are touches, my friend.
There you go. Especially with all the bye weeks going down here and injuries.
Yep.
How about receivers here?
Sterling Shepard will be one of the top adds, 8 targets, 6 catches in his first game back from injured reserve against the Eagles, but he has the Bucs this week. So the matchup's not great, but he is still worth adding. And then Cole Beasley, a former Cowboy, something about the Cowboys that I can talk about in a positive light. Because he used to play for us, right? 12 targets, 11 catches, over 22 fantasy points against the Jets. Beasley has scored at least 12 fantasy points in 5 of his last 6 games, so his floor is really nice, right? He doesn't have a gigantic ceiling, but he has also combined to score 36.7 points in his last 2 games. And they've got the Patriots. Did you watch the Patriots yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
That's not the Patriots we're used to. That team is in a lot of trouble. So Beasley needs to be added. Nelson Aguilar, make all the jokes you want about him. 3 touchdowns in his last 3 games. It looks like he's the number one wide receiver there for Derek Carr. Brandon Ayuk for the 49ers, 17.5 points against the Patriots. Debo Samuel left the game with a hamstring injury. Not sure about his status, so Ayuk could be the number one guy there. Randall Cobb, 10 targets, 8 catches, 95 yards against Green Bay. 10-plus points in all but 1 game this year. They also have a bye, the Texans do, but if you want to stash Cobb, you can do that. Rashad Higgins for the Browns, very good game. 6 targets, 6 catches, 100 yards, 17 points against the Bengals. And Odell Beckham Jr. is going to miss time, maybe significant time due to that knee injury. They've got the Raiders in week 8. And then Marcus Johnson, talking a little deeper league here, 8 targets, 5 catches, 105 yards against the Bengals before the Colts bye week. And so if you're in a deeper league, he could be worth a look as well. He's got the Lions coming up in week 8.
All right, and the tight ends, nice of Baker. You know, Austin Hooper's out with the appendectomy. Baker gets the other tight ends involved just to sort of, taunt anyone who who picked right. up Njoku, thinking he'd get most of it.
Yeah, I loved Hooper coming into this week, and then we find out why, right? I was on Sirius XM on my Sunday morning show, and I said, hey, Harrison Bryant's a sleeper this week. Put him in my start him and sit him column as a DFS bargain. 5 targets, 4 catches, 80 yards later. And by the way, 2 touchdowns. He is now firmly on the radar from a fantasy perspective. And we're not sure what the status of Hooper is. He could miss week 8 because of that appendectomy. And again, they've got the Raiders. So Bryant's worth a look. Richard Rodgers, who I talked about last week as well, is a nice DFS play. 8 targets, 6 catches, 85 yards, 14.5 points against the Giants. Zach Ertz is out. Dallas Goedert is out. Carson Wentz, it doesn't matter who the hell the tight end is. He doesn't care. He targets the tight end more than any quarterback in the National Football League. So Richard Rodgers is worth a look. A couple of other guys, Trey Burton for the Colts coming off the bye. He had 11 targets in his 2 games previous to the bye. And Mo Alie-Cox has been banged up, Lions this week. And then Irv Smith Jr., 10 targets in the 2 games before Minnesota's bye. And they've got Green Bay this week. So he is also worth a look in some of those deeper leagues.
Fabs, we are always grateful for the insight here, especially those of us trying to navigate bye weeks and injuries here. I don't know. I'm keeping it together. It's scotch tape together, but I'm keeping it together here. I feel like right. This is helping me out.
Well, that's right. What I'm here to do, my friend. I'm here to help fantasy owners win a championship, and I'm here to crap on the Cowboys. Those are basically my 2 job descriptions at this point. Make sure you tune into my SiriusXM show, Fantasy Dirt, tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern. There's going to be a lot of that going on the show.
Yeah. You got that? And look, again, 7 days a week, si.com/fantasy, SI Fantasy Podcast, and get them here every Monday. Fabs, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, my brother.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
All right, Connor Orr back with us. Browns, Bengals. Baker Mayfield needed this one, and he gets it without Odell Beckham Jr. And look, the Bengals are boy, are they bad defensively. And you should put up points against them. We saw Phillip Rivers do it last week where the Colts spotted him 21 points, and then Phillip Rivers you do what you want against this Bengals defense. That's kind of the unit that they are. But Baker Mayfield, it's been such a struggle this season, especially the last you know, five quarters leading up to this comeback, and he gets it done here, and that's encouraging, despite my tone.
Yeah, that's encouraging. The best offensive game for a Browns quarterback since Derek Anderson in 2008, I think. And so, you know, yeah, I think that this is good. I mean, and I think it's good for Baker Mayfield. I think he's one of those players that, while he might never admit it, definitely thrives on that confidence and getting into that rhythm. And, you know, I mean, shoot, Joe Burrow played as well as he possibly could have in that game, and Baker Mayfield still, you know, Baker Mayfield still outplayed him. But, you know, what really blew my mind there is this was a guy who was sort of middling in terms of the things that he does well all season. And that was what was confusing to a lot of people. Like, the reason that you drafted him is because he's insanely accurate and he makes quick decisions and all that kind of stuff. And this week you saw it, right? 2.5 seconds from snap to throw. So, like, super mechanical in that way. And then a plus 16.6. In points over expected completion percentage, which is wild. I mean, you know, and maybe some of those games where, you know, it's there's highs and lows and misses, but this is one of those where I think all that good fortune or whatever it is comes back and gets him on this one. So, just a renaissance game for him and one of those deals where if you're the Browns moving forward, I mean, obviously you're still licking your wounds from two significant losses from two teams that you have to play again. But if you can kind of nibble around the edges here and beat the rest of these bad teams, then who cares? You know, you're still going to make the playoffs, which is great.
Yeah, that's the thing. Pile up wins. They're all NFL teams. I know we make fun of some of them more than others, but they're all NFL teams. And look, this was one that really could have gone off the rails here for the Browns. I mean, you know, I think Baker was he started 0 for 5 or 0 for 6 in this one, and then Odell is hurt. And you just wonder if it was going to be a meltdown in Cincinnati, and they bounce back nicely. And obviously, he really has a strong performance after that. And it's the kind of thing you can build off of, you know? You get it done. It's like the shooter who sees the ball go through the net after a cold streak. Sometimes it just sort of unlocks what you're doing going forward.
And look at the Browns' schedule moving forward. So they have the Raiders next week, which is, I think really interesting because talent-wise, I would put those teams at sort of an even, you know, an even matchup. This is a good sort of bellwether game for the Browns, but then the very bad Texans, the Eagles, and the Jaguars. So you could theoretically end the month of November with what, 9 wins?
You know? I could see this November going anywhere between 3-1 and 1-3, like a legitimate. If they can build off of this and they get that win against Vegas here.
If they get the win against Vegas, right? Yeah. And then just look at the rest of that going forward. And then, not only that, but then you still have the Jets and the Giants on your schedule after that. Like, you know, if you played well, like this is potentially an 11-win football team. Even if you get blown out by the Ravens and the Steelers again and you lose to the Titans, you know, this is potentially like a 10 or 11-win football team, which is crazy.
Do it, Cleveland. Do it for once. Here we go.
You won't.
Joe Burrow was really good in this game, too, obviously. Joe Burrow continues to be good. He lost two linemen in this one. And look, Jonah Williams is one of the guys who is sort of barely holding his own on that offensive line. So good on him. Let's go. Let's go to Washington. Look. Oh, boy. The Cowboys get the goal line stand early. And it's just kind of like, all right, maybe this defense, maybe we're going to turn it around a little bit. You're not going to flip the switch and all of a sudden be a good unit, but maybe you're going to hang on, especially against a Washington team that just is not good offensively. The sheer quantity of missed tackles and blown coverages that this defense puts forth on a weekly basis now is unlike anything I've ever seen in this league. And I have theories, but I'm just gonna lay that out there right now. It's just it is unbelievable how poorly they are playing on that side of the ball.
If this wasn't a historically bad year for the NFL, like if this was not like a pandemic shortened off season, they would be the worst defense in the league by a mile. Now, thankfully for the Cowboys, they have the Jets and they have a couple other teams that kind of are lingering behind them. But this team is awful. And they're awful in every way, shape, or form, and they shouldn't be. They should be running away with the NFC East, even with Andy Dalton as their quarterback. He is good enough to win games, especially with the rest of that that roster. But this defense, it starts there, and you wonder how long the Cowboys front office is going to put up with this, because they kind of envision this as their next version of the triplets, and with Irvin and Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and all this stuff, but everybody is underperforming at every position, and it doesn't make much sense. And for me, it's like you're sitting here saying, how much longer are they going to put up with something like this?
Yeah, and look, we talked about Mike Nolan a little bit last week, and again, Mike Nolan is a polar opposite of what they used to do in Dallas under Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard. It was going to be a difficult transition no matter what. Even in a normal offseason, it's a tough transition. This offseason, especially tough. That said, I mean, this is a completely uncompetitive group at this point. Now, I will say, the other thing I'll say in Nolan's defense, even in the more simplistic Richard Marinelli system last year, there were a lot of weeks where they just did not tackle people. It might just be a matter of the guys on the back seven just don't tackle people, and that's, you're going to lose a lot of games right now in the NFL if you can't tackle people. But it is getting tough to see a path forward, especially when you get, this week you had, the rumblings, anonymous players complaining about the coaches in the media. And I got to think that's mostly defense, because the offense can at least point to the injuries and say, well, that's why we're not performing.
Yeah, no, totally. And, the defense again, nothing about this makes any sense, to the point where, I would almost just call Chris Richard and ask him to come back and fix it. He's available.
He's not doing anything right now. Yeah.
It's like, hey, just come back and let's start running the defense that we ran last year. But yeah, Mike McCarthy put a lot of pressure on himself and his staff unwittingly by sort of campaigning for the job like he did in the offseason and promising something that he ultimately either knew or had a general idea that he wasn't going to be able to deliver on, and probably thought that he could just win enough games based on the talent alone there. But this defense needs some love. It needs some attention. And I don't know if McCarthy's willing to make a move there. I don't know if he's going to be forced to make a move there. But, I mean, at some point, some team is going to want to win the NFC East, and Dallas will be left behind.
Yeah, this is and look, offensively, it was a completely backup offensive line. No Zach Martin as well in this one. So, they were going to have a tough time with that Washington team that has invested so heavily in the defensive line. You can understand why it was a struggle there. Andy Dalton ends up leaving this one after a pretty filthy hit by John Bostic on a Dalton slide, and Mike McCarthy was upset that no one punched Bostic in the crotch or something after that happened. But it's just, this is starting to take on a feel of like you remember those 2015 Cowboys where Romo got hurt, I want to say like early October, and then it was like a rotation of, it was Matt Cassel, and then it was Brandon Whedon, and it was Kellen Moore for a couple of weeks, and they just, they finished 4-12. It's taking on that kind of feel for the Cowboys, where, yes, it's a disaster and it's an embarrassment, but you wonder if they'll just come back next year and sort of be able to do that full turnaround once Dak is back and once you get the offensive line a little bit healthier, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you trust Mike McCarthy to do that, though, is the question. And I think that what people don't understand is that they're operating on a couple different timelines, right? Jerry Jones wants to win another Super Bowl before the end of, as morbid as it sounds, before the end of, his time being being, and it might not even be that, but just until he's no longer sort of an as active part of the franchise as he is now, but he's 78, this is still very much a team that he had a lot invested in and a lot of say in. And I think mm-hmm. he wants this roster to win a Super Bowl, but, and I think they're good enough, but, if you does he go back to the old Jerry a little bit and start riling people up and firing people and I don't know, making it known that he's not going to tolerate any losses like this?
The big question to me is defensive side of the ball going forward. And I'm talking long term over the next 2 or 3 years. Do you come to the conclusion that the players just weren't good enough and that's why it didn't work under Rashard and that's why it's not working under Nolan? I mean, look, the linebackers are sliding back. Those young linebackers that they're supposed to be built around for the next 5 years. Jalen Smith is having a brutal year. And quite frankly, I think Leighton Vander Esch might be playing as poorly, but he missed a couple games, so people haven't noticed quite as much. Or, you know, do you let it play out the rest of the year and hope that they adjust to the new scheme and things turn around a little bit, and then you add, you know, someone to make up for the fact that you let Byron Jones walk, which was a terrible idea, and start moving forward from there? But I think you can at least look at the offensive side of the ball and say, okay, well, Dak will be back next year and we'll be okay. Defensive side of the ball, I don't know, and I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if the solution is going back to you know, more of that straightforward scheme that you ran under Marinelli and Rashard for so many years, or do you plow ahead with this, or is neither way the right answer because you just don't have the players?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, I think that if you gave, I don't know, probably the top five or six defensive coordinators in the league, the Cowboys defense, you would see a top 10 defense. I don't think that's a massive stretch, fully healthy. But I don't know. This is it's scary times in Dallas, lean times.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Atlanta. Look, I know no one was paying attention to this game because there were two losing record teams and you know, as good as the quarterbacks are. And quite frankly, this game should have been like 40-39 or something. I mean, both these quarterbacks are great. Both these defenses are terrible. They should have been a little bit more aggressive here on the offensive sides of the ball. But it ends up being a really really interesting ending here. Lions are back in it. Lions are 3-3 now. They are in the postseason conversation again. Not that anyone's really out of it, but there are some teams that are out of it when we get to week 7. Matthew Stafford takes him 75 yards and 64 seconds to win it. He does so because Atlanta just lacks understanding of situational football. And I don't know, what did you think when Todd Gurley is accidentally scoring a touchdown there?
That Atlanta's the only team that could score a game-losing touchdown. Like, it's just... Yeah. There needs to be a saging of the entire facility at this point to just before they bring the next new head coach in to just really cleanse the whole place.
It was brutal. It was brutal for the Falcons, and it was great for the Lions. And the Lions, again, the Lions do what they can to lose games like this. You know, TJ Hockenson catches no timeouts here for the Lions when they get the ball back. They got to go 75 yards in 64 seconds. TJ Hockenson makes a catch on the sideline and stays inbounds. Clock runs. Danny Amendola, after they tie the game with the touchdown, Danny Amendola takes his helmet off, which is a dumb rule, but everyone knows it's a rule, and gets the 15-yard flag. So they got to kick a 48-yarder to win the game instead of the usual 33-yard PAT. And they just, you know, it was two teams kind of figuring out who could lose it in a more creative way. And in the end, the Falcons win that battle and lose the game.
That is the perfect it's what you expect out of a Lions Falcons game, right? Like, you go into it thinking, here's two teams that don't know how to win. Let's see what happens. And this is exactly what we got.
No one will close out this game. Let's head out to Vegas. The would have been Sunday night game, Bucks Raiders. This one was pretty interesting until it got to the fourth quarter, and the Bucks end up stringing together three touchdowns in a 4-minute span and just absolutely blow the doors off the Raiders here. I thought Derek Carr was game again in this one. Again, no Trent Brown, obviously, because of the COVID list. Gabe Jackson got tossed in the third quarter for, I still haven't seen a good replay on it. They said he stepped on an opponent's shoulder after a Raiders touchdown, and that's why they tossed him. If you could see the field level replay, maybe you could see something. And it might have just been shockingly an overreaction from officials. But he gets tossed, and the Raiders do nothing in the fourth quarter here, except for just sort of get smashed.
Yeah, and it's hard to say where, I mean, obviously the defense is a problem there. I think that their inability to develop a running game based on a few factors, you know, is concerning moving forward. The only thing you're not really worried about, I think, if you're a Raiders fan, is Derek Carr. Like you said, he's playing well enough. He's moving the ball. He's developed Nelson Aguilar into like one of the better receivers in the league. He's just continuing to torch people, like kind of like he did that Super Bowl year where Doug Peterson kind of found a comfortable way to use him. And Darren Waller's obviously a big matchup threat there. But my big takeaway is, as much as I complained about and still think the Antonio Brown signing is ridiculous and stupid, there's a chance that he makes this offense almost unstoppable. You know, in the way that we had thought, like the Cardinals could make themselves unstoppable. I mean, this could be like, let's just put four guys out there and dare anybody to try to cover us, and it could get really scary in a hurry, I think, for defensive coordinators. Just when looking at, you know, all the options that they have right now. I mean, Scotty Miller went 6 for 109 in this game. And, you know, it's Chris Godwin is catching everything. Rob Gronkowski's, I think, finally sort of developing himself back into the player that we thought he might be. I think he's finally getting his sea legs back under him. And, man, this team's good. This team is going to be really, really good.
Yeah, Brady throws for 369 and 4 TDs. They put up 45 points. So you could see why they were desperate to sort of lower themselves into the sewer and pluck out Antonio Brown. And the just in case spin is already happening on behalf of Brady, where, you know, Bruce Arians has said, this was me and Jason Light. This is our decision. And that's, look, that's what they got to do. They're the ultimate decision makers. But, we all know why Antonio Brown will be joining the Bucs. Not next week. They play the Giants Monday night, but then they go out to New Orleans in week 9. And look, I even thought before they beat the Packers, this was the most complete team in the NFC. And I think there's just absolutely no doubt about it at this point.
Yeah, and it's happening at a weird time where I think everybody's overreacting and saying that Brady is now responsible for the Belichick dynasty, and man, 2020 just needs to end. You know, that's all I got to say.
Everyone's inside just hatching terrible takes. I mean, that's just kind of what we do here.
Me included. I'm not above that.
That's let's go to East Rutherford, Bills Jets here. Jets hung around in this one. Adam Gase hands over play calling duties to Dow Logans. I will say I noticed the Jets finally got a little more aggressive on third and medium and third and long, and that's great, and that's how they ended up putting up some early points in this one, and then just it completely dried up, and they just did nothing for, three quarters in this game offensively. What people will take away from this is, you know, the Bills are struggling to beat the Jets. This was a one-possession game for most of the game. Bills end up getting 6 field goals to account for their points. There was going to be red zone regression. That was kind of the theme of the week. It was the theme with the Seahawks, and it was the theme with the Bills here. They make 4 red zone trips. They come away with 6 points on those 4 red zone trips because it included a missed field goal and a turnover. So if you exclude the kneel down possession at the end, that's 4 trips, 6 points. And that's just, you know, that's not going to get it done unless you're playing the Jets at this point. But I don't know. The good news is Josh Allen is streaky. The last 2 weeks have been a reminder that he is a streaky quarterback. And, he gets a chance to sort of turn things around when they play the Patriots next week.
Yeah. Well, you know, my two takeaways here for your Jets fan is, hey, Denzel Mims, like, there's something kind of be excited about. You know, that was something, averaging like 10 yards a catch. He's, you know, caught majority of his targets there, didn't do anything kind of totally insane. And I think if you're a Bills fan, it's like, okay, yeah, we have not been playing well, we've hit our lull, and that's what happens when you deal with a, you know, streaky quarterback. But, you know, Josh Allen still manufactures things that, you know, would boost his, you know, would boost the team on any given play, right? He still leads the team in rushing in an ugly game like this, or, you know, he doesn't take a ton of sacks and throw a ton of interceptions as much as he used to. You know, he's still playing smart football when nothing's there for them. And so I think that that's a positive that you can take away there moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. No, when you can do a lot of things, you can fall back on things like just scrambling and just sort of the street ball type approach that you'll see Josh Allen take. Going down to Houston, the Packers bounce back in a big way after the Tampa loss last week. Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams was absolutely just on fire in this game. Adams ends up with 13 catches for 196 and the two touchdowns. And I don't know. I don't know if anyone out there was legitimately concerned about the Packers offense going forward, but it was not only good to see them play well in this game, but it was good to see Rodgers to Adams just fully back on track here.
Yeah, it's one of the most beautiful things in football. And I think it's great. And if I were Houston, my advice is to sort of allow Deshaun Watson to come down with some sort of nebulous ankle injury and sit for the rest of the season until you get somebody who understands how to use him properly.
Saints and Panthers. This was, look, I love coaches who can solve problems. The Saints go into this one. Both of their top two receivers are out. No Michael Thomas, no Emmanuel Sanders in this one. And they find a way to move the ball offensively. You know, Alvin Kamara is a good answer to have in this one. But I do want to talk about the play that forced the Panthers to have to try a game-tying 65-yarder instead of like a 50-something-yarder in this game. And again, it's a third down, it's a third and long. Saints put a bunch of guys on the line of scrimmage. Panthers ultimately didn't know who was coming, who wasn't. They loop Marcus Davenport, who, by the way, you know, Marcus Davenport, maybe he's never, you know, never a a glorious sort of million moves type of pass rusher, but he's a guy who, if you create the space for him, he gets to the quarterback so fast, and he looped inside, and he was on top of Teddy Bridgewater so fast, only a running back between them, and it was a tremendously schemed sack to push the Panthers back there, where they just perfectly used a uniquely athletic player, and I just thought it was a. I thought it deserved a little more credit than I think people were giving it yesterday.
Yeah, and to get him sort of matched up, like, almost exactly how you would draw it up. Like, sometimes coaches are like, yeah, you hope that this works, but to actually get him into the backfield, have him matched up against a running back, which is exactly what you want on that play, you know, and to be able to collapse the pocket as quickly as they did, you know, it was beautiful. Like, it was perfect. And it ruined what was going to be a great Connor Orr narrative, which is that Joe Brady is probably only going to be the offensive coordinator of the Panthers for 1 year. He's probably going to be a head coach in the NFL somewhere else. But I still think that might actually be true anyway.
I think it might be true, too. I mean, we made fun of all the junior Sean McVays who are taking over the league. But you see what the Packers are doing right now, see what the Cardinals are doing right now. I think there's going to be a lot of Joe Brady buzz coming up here. Because
what is he? What would he be? He's like a junior. I don't know, right? Because he was on the Saints staff for a little bit, and then 1 year as the offensive coordinator at LSU, and they win the national championship. Then 1 year as the offensive coordinator of the Panthers, and they're all of a sudden hyper relevant and talented, and, you know, almost beating good teams like the Saints. And so I don't know. What would you call him? He's like I don't know, maybe like more of a mysterious outsider, you know?
I'd like to think that, but I think he'll just be forever linked to the Sean Payton tree if he's a successful NFL offensive coach. I think the rest of that goes out the window.
True.
Yeah, you got to simplify your narratives. That's what this is all about. All right, Chiefs Broncos, they played it in the snow, and look, I want to feel good about this Broncos team going forward, and I kind of do, and but you know, pick six for Daniel Sorensen in the second quarter, and then soon after a kickoff return touchdown for the Chiefs. I mean, there's zero chance. Melvin Gordon had two just awful turnovers himself. I mean, give yourself a chance to win this game, and they didn't.
Yeah, and you know, you want them to be patient and not burn it all down, because I think that Elway's sort of indecisiveness there only hurts the franchise in the long run. But and they're finally starting to kind of build these signature wins. But if you want to have faith in what's going on moving forward, you need to play the Chiefs closer than that. And they did. I mean, you know, they had an answer for Patrick Mahomes, relatively speaking. I mean, he didn't torch them like he torches other defenses. But, you know, you need to play them tighter than that.
And Chargers Jaguars, Justin Herbert gets a win, a long deserved win at this point. Has another big game in this one, and I don't know. It's good. It's probably a lost year for the Chargers here, but you know, they certainly have found their quarterback of the future.
Yeah, if it wasn't, you know, and I don't know. We'll see moving forward if he can get them on a little bit of a run here. I'm not ready to totally count him out as a Rookie of the Year candidate yet. I mean, he's playing that well. And Joe Burrow is excellent. I mean, he has elevated the Bengals, to my surprise, from like complete bottom of the basement nothingness to relevance, which is it's huge. And that's all the credit in the world to him. But I think Herbert is just, I mean, there's so much there. And you just hope that if you're the owner of the Chargers, for example, you recognize that and don't completely just upend everything and totally destroy his development.
No, that's a good offensive Rookie of the Year race there. And I don't know. Maybe you and I have a debate style show one day where we will talk about whether you would, if you're Trevor Lawrence, would you rather avoid the Jets or the Jaguars? Because I know what the Jets are putting out on the field, and I know what the Jaguars. Jaguars were competitive. They you know, fell behind in this game, then rallied to come back. Part of me thinks I'd rather go with the Jets front office and Joe Douglas than what the Jaguars are doing there in the front office, as far as just consistently every year just finding new ways to alienate their star players and having to trade them for day two draft picks. But that's one for the ages.
This is an interesting argument. Here's my counter to that. I think if you got somebody in there, you know, Trevor Lawrence, if he goes to the Jaguars, is going to be able to essentially, through back channels, pick his head coach and offensive coordinator, right?
Yeah.
He's going to say, this is who I want to run this team. This is the kind of offense that I can succeed in, yada, yada. I mean, we already know how that's going to happen. Here's my pitch for Jacksonville. I think that Dave Caldwell, historically, when you look at the picks that have been unsuccessful, Leonard Fournette was a Tom Coughlin pick, right? Mm-hmm. That was, you know, and I think left to his own devices, maybe Deshaun Watson there, I don't know. But, you know, you look at this team that beat the Colts and surprised the hell out of everybody on week one, and, you know, that's what he does. He finds good talent in the end, the middle of the end of drafts, like cheap talent, like Yannick Ngakoue was a third round pick, Allen Robinson, you know, Hearns for a couple years there. You know, there are good quality NFL players that he can kind of pluck out there and build the backbone of a roster that, if you had Lawrence, I think would make you incredible, you know. And I think over time you can probably eradicate the idea that you're not player friendly because Coughlin's gone. Marone is sort of a Coughlin disciple, and also a notorious hard ass. And, you know, if he's gone, then maybe all of a sudden this place gets a little friendlier. I don't know. But it's also hard to argue against someone like Joe Douglas. He's from a great management tree, but we just haven't seen what he's done yet in terms of, like, show me four or five of these players that you've kind of dug out and can kind of form the backbone of a roster like that.
It's, boy, choices for Trevor Lawrence. And that's the thing. That's the thing that we kind of lose track of, because Trevor Lawrence is such a you know, relative can't-miss prospect. He might be the most can't-miss guy since Andrew Luck, which doesn't mean he absolutely cannot miss, but he's pretty close to a sure thing as far as what you see coming into the league. And it's just a reminder, he's going to go to a really bad team. That's the way the draft is built. A good organization won't be taking him. He's not going to go to the Chiefs or to the Patriots or something.
Okay, he could theoretically go to the Falcons or the Vikings, and I would say that those are two traditionally good franchises, right?
You think, like, they'll bottom out that badly, though? I don't know. You're right. It is within the realm of possibility.
If I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm doing it on purpose, man.
Yeah.
Who cares? You know?
Yeah.
You burn this thing down and get yourself a quarterback for the next 10 years, you know?
One can only hope.
It's going to be the Raiders somehow. We all know it.
they retroactively just forfeit games.
Yeah, there's just like, no, you know what? We're just I'm bored with this Derek Carr stuff. It's time to ruin somebody else's career. Yeah.
By the way, we cheated in the following games. Please strip us of all our losses. And I will say one more thing. I know we already finished talking about the game like 20 minutes ago. Derek Carr and look, the knock on Derek Carr was like, nobody likes getting hit, but he really doesn't like hanging in and getting hit and stuff like that. Derek Carr on a 4th and 1 tried to scramble for a first down, and he came up, you know, he ended up like being the Washington Generals of this play where Devin White hit him with a head of steam. I mean, Devin White just got a clear, 20-yard, just straight ahead run at Derek Carr and just blasted him. And I don't know if you really saw Derek Carr. I hate to call guys tough when I'm watching football games, from my couch and eating candy corn and just being a very soft human being overall. But Derek Carr, I think, has elevated sort of a level of toughness that I think people question coming into this year. And I don't know, he's had such a nice year, and I really hope the Raiders stick with him for at least give him like one more season, see if you can finish building this thing out, and then see what you have going forward.
Yeah, well, I can say too that in kind of calling around this offseason when it looked like that the Raiders might make a run at Tom Brady, you know, a couple people had told me like, yeah, I mean, just wait, if they let Derek Carr out on the market, see how fast he snapped up and put to good use. I think that there is an opinion around the league that he was, you know, that he's much better or can be much better, and there's still a lot of room for growth there.
We still love you, Derek Carr.
That's a good way to end the podcast right there.
It really is. Let's roll credits. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the other MMQB shows. That's the Weekside Podcast with Connor Orr and Jenny Vrentis, as well as the Albert Breer Show, which features Albert Breer. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The wait is almost over.
Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.